Journalist Paul Roberts, best-selling author of The End of Oil and The End of Foods, has a new book out entitled The Impulse Society, America in the Age of Instant Gratification. It is a defining account which answers the question, how, in our current culture of narcissism, does one cope with a socioeconomic system that is almost too good at giving us what we want? Again, the name of the book is The Impulse Society, and it's a great pleasure to welcome journalist Paul Roberts to the program. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
You bet.
Let us begin with that term of culture of narcissism. How do you define that culture, and how do you think we ultimately came to it?
Well, I mean, it was coined by Christopher Lash, a social historian 30 years ago, in a book of the same name. And he was really noticing the way that our culture was bending itself around individual wants and desires. And I think what has happened since then, in the last, you know, in the 30 years or so since then, is that the whole economy has gotten really proficient at delivering what individuals want in the immediate moment, delivering now. But at the same time, it's gotten less adept at delivering what we need as a society in the long term. And it's that tension that informs the narrative of the book, but I think also explains a lot of the concerns that we have today, whether we're looking at a paralyzed Congress, whether we're looking at a corporate world that seems unable to look at anything other than next quarter's earnings, whether we're looking at a population that is mired in debt thanks to, you know, a free-for-all in consumption. Really, we've got a society that's focused on the here and now and is losing the capacity to think about the future.
And I think that is what is so interesting about what you're writing about, because if you look at the most significant social and economic crisis that we're facing, that you believe this impulse society, that the fingerprints of the society are all over those issues.
Right. And I think it's important to sort of keep in mind that, I mean, the problems that I really address in the book are problems that people have, you know, encounter in their daily lives. It's, you know, our frustration, again, with the political system. It's a concern that business leaders and Wall Street are operating on a different sort of scale and to a different set of standards than the rest of us are allowed to operate on. And it's concern that in our own lives, the focus on immediate gratification has become almost a reason for being. And it's crowding out a lot of the more traditional values that, you know, we were taught as children and presumably we're teaching our own children. And I mean values like patience, self-discipline, the willingness to believe in something larger than yourself. Those are values that are getting harder and harder to maintain, again, in a culture that's so focused on individual rapid gratification and a culture and a socioeconomic system that makes that kind of gratification so easy. I mean, look at the digital realm. It's all about clicking and being immediately rewarded. And we are growing more and more accustomed to that kind of a quick response. You know, so such that if you're loading a web page and you have to wait more than half a second, the rage you begin to feel, you know, how dare I have to wait? How dare the system force me to wait? And if you sort of imagine that attitude, and it's almost a subconscious attitude, but if you imagine that attitude playing out across the landscape in terms of our life experiences, it's really worrisome because, you know, real life and the things that are worth having don't show up immediately. They require patience and an investment and a willingness to, you know, think long term. And yet we're sort of being trained in the other direction.
And if there's any good to come from that, it is, you write, anxiety. It is the anxiety that we feel when we are waiting for that web page to load. It is the anxiety that we feel when we want something at that moment and we're not getting it. And yet you believe that anxiety could ultimately be our salvation.
Right, because again, we know, each of us, at the end of the day, we know what the sort of values we should be pursuing. I mean, we understand the virtue of patience. And so, and we recognize that that's not being served. That's a value that's being pushed to the margins, and it bothers us because we know that a society can't survive without those basic values, and it, you know, you can't survive at the level of the individual or the family or the community, and certainly not at the country. I mean, look, if you're a parent and you're now struggling with how much freedom to allow your children in terms of their personal technology, their smartphones, it's really challenging because you recognize that your child, I mean, you like the fact that you can connect with your child, that your child can connect with other people, and Right. Your child is sort of staying up to date with technology. On the other hand, you begin to see changes in your child's behavior. You begin to see that the child is so focused on this gadget in their hand that they're starting to not pay attention to things in the real world. And that anxiety that we feel as parents, it's part of a larger pattern. I mean, we see that same sort of problem everywhere we look in society, where we've got this capacity, this technological capacity or this economic capacity to focus on instant gratification, and it is in many respects getting in the way of our capacity or willingness to look at these larger problems.
So with patience and self-sacrifice and discipline out the window, no longer necessary, how do we revive those values and get back to that point where we don't go crazy if we don't get what we want at that very moment?
Well, I think that we're already seeing a lot of that happen. And, I mean, that's the encouraging part of the story here is that, you know, everywhere you look, people are pushing back against this system that allows gratification to come too readily. So, you know, a lot of my friends and I know a lot of parents everywhere are beginning to consider unplugging as far as their children are concerned, limiting their use of these technologies, at least until the kids can, you know, grow up and get enough maturity to manage that responsibly on their own, you know, for themselves.
Mm.
So, you know, this willingness to sort of push back against the digital realm and to not assume that every upgrade is a must-have. I mean, I always thought it was a little worrying that people would get so excited about the next, you know, Apple upgrade, even though they didn't know what was in the upgrade. I mean, they'd spend the night in the street out in front of the Apple store without a clear sense of what they were waiting for. And that struck me as a perfect example of a society that has really become obsessed with upgrades without really knowing where those upgrades are taking us. So I think a more deliberative approach to technology. I mean, technology is essential, and these upgrades are going to continue whether we like them or not. But what needs to change, I think, is our reflexive sort of embrace of them. We need to ask, what is this new technology, whether it's a new iPhone or a new tool in the financial world? What is this new capability? What does it provide us? What are the costs and the benefits? And make a decision that way. We've gotten so reflexive in our embrace of innovation that I think we're letting the market drive us and lead us where it needs us. And keep in mind that these new capabilities that the market is pouring out for us, they're not really for our benefit. I mean, you know, companies don't come up with these things to make us happier. They're really to drive the company's bottom line, which is what business has always done, and that's fine. But I think we need to reassert our consumer sovereignty, if you will, by, among other things, taking a more deliberative approach to this. Do we really need this? How are we going to use it? How is it going to affect the rest of our lives? Those sorts of questions, I think, really need to be addressed more often than they are today.
I'm curious in something you said. I find it interesting because you're saying that you find optimism in having parents say to their children, okay, you have to unplug and become less committed to these devices, less committed to this technology. And yet this is coming from a parental group and an adult group, and you use the word maturity. I don't know that I see that maturity in the adults. It seems that much of that what the kids are doing is a mirror of what their parents are doing, of drooling over this new stuff, the next upgrade and so forth, that is part of the problem. Until we can change that and bring in a new generation of kids that aren't as reliant on that.
I agree with you. I mean, they're modeling what they see. And I guess what I was sort of arguing was that you'd need both. I mean, going back to that anxiety that people feel, I think when they look at the way their kids are operating, they recognize, first of all, they see, you know, that the kids are modeling the parents' behavior, and I think there's a lot of anxiety over that. But I think it's also an opportunity for families to reassess their approach to personal technology. And it's that opportunity that I'm optimistic about, because we're starting to have that conversation. That's the kind of thing that you read about in a lot of parent blogs and in the sort of online world generally. What is the proper approach for personal technology and our kids? You know, it's a topic that's no longer new. It's something that it's out there. I think that's really encouraging. And I think that's a same conversation has to be addressed in terms of the sorts of capabilities that the corporate world is getting. I mean, if you go back and look at the financial meltdown, a lot of that is driven by companies, especially financial companies, that had obtained huge new capabilities in terms of the sort of derivatives and other financial instruments that they were able to make use of. They had so much power that in many respects they pursued self-interest without concern about the consequences. And, you know, as the economy recovers, we're seeing some of those same patterns reemerge, but we're also seeing concern about that and a discussion among, say, regulators and consumer groups about how do we keep that from happening again. And I'm encouraged by those sorts of conversations as well. There's an awareness that we've got this capacity to focus on immediate self-interest, and that until we figure out how to manage that, the risks of, you know, another meltdown, as an example, or a similar problem like that are ever present. But again, the conversation is starting to happen, and that's encouraging.
And so much of this has to do with availability, right? If we make it cheaper and we make it faster and we make it easier, we're going to be drawn to it. So that's a hard thing to rebel against.
It is, and you've really hit the nail on the head there. I mean, the humans are designed, if you will, to seek out capability, to seek out the capability that allows us to pursue our interests, and that's what we've been doing since the beginning. And up until, you know, the last century or so, it was rarely a problem because our capabilities were never so great that we could inflict so much damage on ourselves. And, you know, that rapidly changes over the course of the last century, and particularly in the last 30 years or so, 30 or 40 years, with the advent of the digital age. So we've been given all this capacity, and it is extremely tempting for reasons that are entirely reasonable. And at the same time, we have cast off a lot of the older social norms and values that at one time had helped individuals manage the way they use this power. I mean, one example would be the place of the church in everyday life. You know, 200 years ago, the church was very specific in terms of telling individuals exactly what to do, how much gratification they could be pursuing. And we've been far less willing to allow the church or religious institutions generally to have that role in our lives. But we don't have anything to replace that, really. And so we're sort of casting about for a new set of values, a new sort of moral framework to help us manage all this capability. We're not there yet, but I think we're beginning to have that discussion. And it's a fraught discussion because nobody, in this society especially, likes to be told that they've got too much power or that they need to curb their pursuit of self-interest. Mm. That's been an American tradition to resist those kinds of curbs. And yet we've reached a point in terms of individual and institutional capability where we're going to need to have that discussion again, and it's going to be an interesting one.
The name of the book is The Impulse Society: America in the Age of Instant Gratification. It's published by Bloomsbury. Paul Roberts, thank you very much for spending time with us. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book is The Impulse Society, published by Bloomsbury. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.